Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a big thanks to Lottie, to David and all the team. It is Monday the 10th of June. You're listening to Game On. Coming up shortly, we'll cross to David Gillick at the European Athletics Championships in Rome after what has been a weekend to remember for Ireland.
And hopefully it's not just over yet. There is more medal potential tonight, and we'll talk to David about that. Plus, we'll have Stephen Ferris on rugby, Niall Moran on the hurling, and John O'Shea sets us up for his reunion with Cristiano Ronaldo tomorrow night in Portugal. If you'd like to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Ruby, how are you?
I'm very good, Damien. Yourself?
Not a bother. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday is right. Had you a good weekend?
I did. I was in Thurles yesterday for... Micheál Ó Mura Hurtig used to famously say that there were two Christmas days, December 25th and whatever Sunday the Munster hurling final fell upon. So, you know, happy Christmas to those who
Was it
celebrate.
A good Christmas day then yesterday?
I didn't think it was great. We might talk about this with Niall Moran later on. Landed into Thurles at 1 o'clock and it was hopping. Like, hopping. And this party almost thinking... This is a 4 o'clock throw-in and not a 2 o'clock throw-in. Now, it was pointed out to me subsequently that if I had to travel on the same road as the Limerick and Clare fans had to travel, that I probably would have been there early as well. Limerick made history. Were they just simply too dominant for Clare? Were Clare not allowed to perform? Did Clare not turn up? Maybe we got a little bit too into the romance of the Munster hurling final and were left walking away thinking, actually, was it that good a contest?
Well... Funny enough, it won't say what kind of a performance it was on the back of the Limerick medalists this morning. It'll just say winner, Damien.
Ultimately, isn't that what's important? And in time to come, it'll say Limerick won, they did six in a row, and poor old Clare had to go off with their tails between their legs after losing three consecutive finals.
Unfortunately, that's the way it is. Rugby was okay. We'll talk to Stephen Ferris about that. No real surprises, was there?
No. And it's you know, people talk about the structures of competitions, and we've had this situation where... You know, you've got the return meetings in the knockout stages of the Champions Cup and you wonder, does it take a little bit of the gloss off it when teams are heading off to face the teams that they've faced before? And I'm starting to wonder the same thing about the URC. Is it simply too drawn out? And, you know, quarterfinals into semifinals into the final, that do you lose the significance of the scale of the matches when the teams... Like, it feels almost like we're having interprovincials every week. Now, I know the knockouts and the seedings and everything pinned... two Irish teams together this weekend, but like, do you remember, like, we're gone beyond a time where the interprovincials were like the biggest deal in the sporting weekend, and we'd be here on a Friday getting so excited about them, and we'd be here on a Monday analysing them to death. And, you know, have they lost their gloss ever so slightly?
That's because it's June and rugby is a winter sport where some genius has decided it should be played in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, and it's just endless. Like, it's, you know, yeah. And it's funny, I can't remember who it was last week was talking about, you know, you'd really feel for the players because if your season ends on the weekend just gone, you're back in training this week to keep yourself fit to go off on a summer tour in a couple of weeks' time. And, you know, Steve Borthwick named an England squad today where he's bringing a whole lot of young fellas on a summer tour. And you'd kind of have to wonder from... the perspective of some of the lads who've been part of, you know, a World Cup into a Six Nations, into the intensity of a season, and now have to head off to South Africa for a couple of weeks. You know,
yeah,
do you need a break somewhere along the way?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but sport tended to give you the breaks that you needed. You tend to get injured and you miss. So you think, well, it went Ireland... provincial, whichever province you play for, back to Ireland again. But you just wonder how many of the players actually will have gone, will have been involved in everything, to how many players that weren't injured, that didn't have time out, that weren't. I know maybe when you're injured it's not a holiday, but it is a break and a sporting career is quite short. So I don't know about the holiday part of it. I just think that there are the time of year that fans associate with sport. Mm. And for me, I don't associate June with rugby.
Yeah, and the problem as well at this point is everything is just so frenetic. Like that it's hard... There is definitely that challenge, and I think rugby did it quite well last year, that rugby owned the tail end of last year because the World Cup was on, the GA seasons were over, you know, League of Ireland was coming towards a conclusion, Premier League was only starting up again, that, you know, but there's just such a battle at the minute for everyone to get attention and to get, you know, parity of coverage and everything else, that something gets lost somewhere along the way. It's just, it's all consuming, you know?
It is all consuming.
From a sporting perspective, what stood out for you then, or did you?
It was athletics, wasn't it? There's no other way of what stood out. Full stop. I mean, from Friday night with the mixed relay to Kieran McGeehan last night, even to tonight. I mean, it doesn't feel like the weekend is over because I mean you're waiting for Radisha Adelecki at 8:30 tonight or 8:50 tonight, and obviously you know we have a couple of athletes competing tonight. Sharon Mosley is in as well, and in the hammer Nicola Tuthill at 8:30. So it just feels like the weekend is still going from an athletics point of view, and it was the highlight. I mean, yeah. There's no doubt about it.
I've often used it as a kind of a throwaway line that the greatest privilege of this job that we do is to be able to come in and bring people news of Irish success on the global landscape. And you kind of forget that we're, you know, like we can play ourselves down about this tiny little rock off the west coast of Europe that has achieved so much on a scale. And, you know, it's great for Ireland, but it's great for the athletes involved as well. Like, it's, you know, you look at Ciara McGeehan, the career she's had. You know, she was on this program at some point last year. I can't remember what it was in advance of. And she used to get stuck. She got stuck into me on that occasion and previously at the awards that we all get obsessed with Rashida and Israel Olatunde and all of these young athletes coming through. And, you know, there's life in the old dogs yet. And, it kind of caught me off guard to hear her interview with David. And we're going to hear from David in a minute. We're going to hear from Ciara, where she's like, that's my first gold medal for Ireland on the international stage. And you think of all that she has been through and what a weekend it is for her, what a chapter in her life, in her career, to finally have that lump of gold to hang around her neck.
It is, and you think she was had won a bronze medal back in 2016, so it's 8 years ago, she was 24 at the time. You think how long she has devoted her life to athletics. Like how many races she's run, how many laps of the track she's run in training. And you think about all the work she's put into it. And you think at 32, has the opportunity passed her by? Yeah, there's a part of me probably thought it had. But when you see her winning last night, you're thinking, fair play to you.
And you know, people, when you have conversations with people and they talk to you about what it is you do, I'm sure injuries come up as the number one topic of conversation time and time again. I always wonder with athletes when you focus in on the attribute of their job, how many hours they spend on their own. You know, how many runs has Ciara McGeehan gone on her own? And, you know, I'm involved. We've a series of programs going on Radio 1 on Sunday evenings. This wasn't an intentional plug, but, you know, John Tracy was on last Sunday. And John Tracy talks at one point in the program. It's called Chapters of Magnificence. He talks about the fact that, you know, he ran a half marathon in New York in advance of preparing for the Moscow Marathon in 84. And he just kept running. So at the end of the half marathon, he just kept going. And he talks about all of these hours that he just spent on his own running to prepare for these events. And, like, it must be up there amongst the most solitude of sports, you know, long distance running. And, you know, you get your benefits in the weekend just gone, and it makes all of those injuries, all of those sacrifices, all those times away from home, and simply all those hours on your own, living in your own head, worthwhile.
Your own thoughts.
Which is a dangerous
thing. You learn to fall in and out with yourself.
Yeah.
Quite quickly.
Yeah,
of course you do. You get ticked with yourself and then you fall back in with yourself and you fall out with yourself. But the only person I think that has to probably be more solitude and more on their own than a marathon runner is a long distance walker. That to me looks like a form of torture.
Yeah. I won't disagree with you. Yeah, it's one of the more listen, maybe we should get Rob Heffernan in some night, seeing as he's up to cover the athletics, about how you get involved in race walking.
I don't know.
Yeah. Listen, will we reflect on the weekend that has been then from athletics perspective?
I think we have to. I think it's been phenomenal. And don't forget tonight, guys, it's on RT, 8:30, 8:50, tune in.
So David Gillick has been in the mix zone chatting to athletes from around the world, and he's been the man who's been there at close quarters to bring us the reaction from Ireland's great successes over the weekend. So before we chat to him from the Olympic Stadium in Rome, let's remind ourselves of that weekend success, starting with the 400 metres mixed relay gold for Ireland. You're not meant to fanboy your colleagues and your friends, but what a weekend it has been to remind us of the simple brilliance as well of Greg Allen.
So now it's Belgium leading. The gold medal is on for Ireland, by the way. A medal is certainly on because they're in second place. That stands to reason. Femke Ball has a 7-metre gap to the bronze medal. She has a 10-metre gap to Charlene Mosley. And Mosley has proved in that world relays in the Bahamas that she can run neck and neck with Femke Ball. Femke Ball is not running down this top three. So now can Charlene Mosley get the better of Hélène Ponet of Belgium? win, and I think she can. She has a tremendous finish, Charlene Walsh. She is strength, she is elegance, she has got a lot going for her. Hélène Ponet is not as quick as Charlene Walsh. Just hold your nerve, she's holding your nerve. This is wonderful from Charlene Walsh. She is such a proficient relay runner, proven it with a gold medal for Ireland.
Yes.
In a huge national record, obliterating the previous record. 3 minutes 9.93 seconds is, would you believe, 1.1 second outside the world record. It's not just a gold medal for Ireland, it's a glittering, glittering gold medal.
It's unbelievable, like everything we dream of. Like when I started there going into the blocks, I really felt like I was doing it for a whole country, and I wasn't nervous, I was really excited because I'm seeing these guys next to me and the support we have in the stadium. It's an unbelievable day, like we can't get over it.
We knew what we could do as a team, you know, we're really strong, we've proven ourselves so many times. I just feel like it was our turn to like win a championship medal on a senior level, and like we really deserve it. We worked so hard and we really trust each other as a team, and that showed on the track today.
We knew off the back of the world relays that we had a really good shot, and not just a medal for this, but if we really got it right on the day, which we did, we got a championship record, I think, close to a world record, and a gold coming away with it, not just on the line either. We took it by storm, and like this isn't going to set in for a while, but we have to enjoy this because they really do not come around that often. I'm a very, very happy athlete right now.
Me and Tom were only saying earlier, we felt so good in the warm-up that we were even like, what's going on? But honestly, it's everything to me. It's probably everything to the team. And the whole stadium was just amazing. The Irish fans turn up every time. And yeah, it's just super.
A little bit of a boxed-in situation here. And she needs to find a gap. Can she find a gap? She needs to burst her way through. She has burst her way through. And Kira McGee's in the gold medal position. And George Bell is fading. And Guillermo is fading. And it's going to be Kira McGee's gold medal. She is doing it. She is adding gold to the silver and bronze. And gold it is. The full set.
Do you know what? Words can't even come close. I've been... Everybody back home knows how long I've been doing this and how hard I've been trying. And I've had so many times whenever I've come off here and I've not felt quite the way I am today. I went out on that track today, super nervous, but with a plan and with a mission, and it was to hear her on the vein. And when I was getting a bit boxed in there, I thought, oh my God, I have all the legs left but nowhere to go. Yeah. I didn't grow up playing camogie to get boxed in though. And look, I want to thank everybody who has helped me get here today to win my first senior gold medal for Ireland, to be at the top of the podium, to hear our national anthem, and to show World Athletics that the Irish are here, and we're here to show where we belong.
That's Ciara McGeehan, Greg Allen on commentary and the relay in advance of that. A fantastic weekend for Irish athletics, and one man who's been up close and personal to enjoy it all joins us now from Rome. David Gillick, how are you?
Damien, I'm good.
Why wouldn't you be? What the most remarkable of weekends, and we go into these championships with great expectation, and we go into these championships with very genuine hope, as we did on this situation. But the last 48, 72 hours have, like, it must be mind-blowing to be there and witness it firsthand.
Oh yeah, like, you know, look, from my perspective, it's a privilege to interview the athletes as they come off the track, and in terms of gold medals and coming to a major championship with an element of expectation and then following that through, and it all kicked off on Friday night. Like, you know, to have that mixed relay team who we knew were in, you know, good shape, we knew that a medal was on the cards, to be honest with you. And you know, when you kind of look at, okay, well, who's the biggest kind of rivals here, it was the Dutch. But when the race unfolded and on leg two the Dutch were just blown to bits, then the opportunity was on, and when they just kind of came across the line, Charlene, like, it was just fantastic. And there's a load of Irish fans here as well, and it just kind of set the tone for the week, and it gave, I suppose, other athletes that belief that, you know what, maybe I want some of that, I can do that. And it's just kind of snowballed from there, and Ciara McGeehan and everything. It's fantastic for Irish athletics, and it's brilliant to be here.
David, or David, we can keep looking back, but we have to look forward too. What about tonight? I mean, Rashida, half eight, obviously Charlene Mosley's in there as well, but to have two athletes going in a 400 metre final and one with a realistic chance of winning gold.
Absolutely, Ruby. You know, I think, you know, these opportunities and these moments are rare in sport. We've had two already, and we've an opportunity now for getting a third tonight, you know, and to have two athletes in a sprint final at a European Championships is phenomenal. Over 400 metres, as you mentioned, like, Rashida is the big star, and she's a global superstar, and globally people are looking to see what she can do here. And, like, to have Charlene then come behind her and run extremely well this whole season and put herself in a position where it's her first major final, and, like, she'll be in the mix as well. This is the thing, like, it's when you look at Rashida, probably her biggest rival in this is going to be Kaczmarek, the Pole, who was a silver medalist at the World Championships last year. But Rashida's got all the tools, all the ability, and it just comes down to that kind of element of science in 400 meter running. Rashida's the type of athlete who's really fast over 200 meters, so she'll probably go out a little bit quicker. And if she can get enough on Kaczmarek over the first 200 to 300 meters, Kaczmarek then finishes really, really hard, but it may not be enough. So it'll probably be a duel in the home straight between those two. And you've got Klaver, the Dutch athlete, in there as well. Klaver can go off really hard, and if she goes off trying to go with Rashida, she'll probably blow up, and that could be an opportunity for maybe Charlene to come home and maybe get into minor places. But I think overall, like, you're looking at somewhere from, you know, hopefully Rashida can execute her race, win the gold medal, and then for Charlene, if she can kind of come maybe fourth or fifth, I think it's a fantastic achievement for her. But overall, like, you know, we're going into another evening here where we have an opportunity for Ireland to get on top of a podium. It's fantastic.
And, like, Dave, when we look at it, there's so much analysis over the weekend about what has been the key to this and what is it that's been done that's enabled us to have this platform upon which people can perform so well. But at its core, no doubt Ciara was motivated by the fact that the relay team had had all of the attention previously, and it's only natural that, like, Rashida and Charlene will want to go out tonight. That kind of concept that the rising tide lifts all boats, and there's great momentum within the team as a result of the success that other members of the team are having.
Absolutely. It's success breeds success. And I think, you know, as much as they're part of a team and, you know, all friends and things like that, but when you see someone win a medal, you want a piece of that. And that's sport. And there's no badness in it. It's an element of jealousy. I want a piece of that. I want a piece of that action. And I think that's what happens. It's that belief that suddenly we're a nation now that can come to these championships and we can perform and we can win medals. And I think, you know, on Friday, the relay set the tone. Then Ciara comes along and is like, you know what, this is my opportunity now. And it's the first time, you know, when I interviewed Ciara after the first round of the 1500s, she was like, you know what, I'm coming here as favourite. This is my opportunity. Some of her big European rivals aren't here. This is my opportunity to win a gold medal. And she did that. And now you have Rashida, who's here. She wants a medal. She wants a senior medal before she goes into the Olympic Games. And she's well capable of it. And I think that success filters down. It filters down to, say, some of the young athletes in the team here, like the likes of Nicola Tootle, who's going in the final of the Hammer later on as well. Fantastic achievement. Nick Griggs was out there at 19. You know, first opportunity at this level as well. So to be involved in a team like that that's winning medals, that's what it's all about. And I think, you know what, if we can get... if we can come back from these championships with more medals and stuff like that, it's a fantastic way to go into the Olympic Games.
David, what about the confidence of these athletes? You watch Charlene delaying her charge in the 400 on Friday, and then you watch Ciara last night, all the way around the bend, sitting in a pocket, waiting, having the confidence to stay there. Where has this confidence come from in Irish athletes?
It's that kind of belief, and it's knowing that, you know what, like, it's the maturity, it's the exposure to regular high-level competition, it's exposure to training with, you know, really talented training partners. And I think when you referenced both, like, Charlene goes to Belgium, she's over in Papendal quite regularly, so she sees the way the Dutch are operating, so she's exposed to that. Likewise with Ciara, she's training with a really good group over in Manchester, she's competing at a high level. And, you know, even today you had Andrew Coskren show a little bit of class in the 1500 heats. And I think that's just that belief in yourself, it's that confidence to wait, and as you said, wait, stay in the pocket, just wait, bide your time, don't panic. And I think there's a touch of class about that, and we saw it in spades from both athletes. Like, Charlene Maudsley in that final of the relay was exceptional. Like, really, really was exceptional. Likewise with Ciara as well. 120 metres to go in a European final when you're the favourite and you're boxed in, a lot of athletes would crumble and they would panic. She didn't. She waited, and she kept telling herself, a gap will come. And she trusted her gut, and the gap appeared, and she went for it. And that just comes with proper training, proper race execution. Been in races all over the world where you're going to be put under a cosh. How do you deal with it? What do you do? And they both did phenomenally well.
David, when we talk about the strength of Irish athletics, does a part of it need to be magnanimous and talk about the experience that athletes are getting abroad, that we are benefiting from Rashida being in Texas, we're benefiting from Kira's time in Manchester, you know, Elizabeth and Doody's based abroad as well, that you know, for all that athletics is booming in Ireland, at the elite end, are we benefiting too much from expertise abroad rather than domestic expertise?
No, to be honest with you, like, I think having athletes training abroad definitely brings a different dimension to coaching exposure. You know, it creates an environment where some of our, say, kind of team management can dip into what's going on all over the world, like Coach Flo over in Texas. That would never be available before, but because Rashid is over there, there's an opportunity now that some of our coaches can actually be exposed to what way are they doing it. But I also think, like, there has been an investment in our coaching setup within Athletics Ireland over the last kind of, you know, 5 to 10 years. There's been a huge emphasis put on relays, okay? You know, relays are an opportunity to get young talent into championships, expose them to this level of competition. And that has worked really well. And that's why there's a strength of depth, in particularly on the women's 400-meter relay. Like, there's huge depth there. So I think it's something that, like, Athletics Ireland have. They increased their membership there by a couple of euro a couple of years ago, and then I think 60,000 members, that gave them 180 grand, and they ring-fenced that money and put it directly back into supporting coaches. You know, because there's a lot of coaches, and Kira alluded to it last night, are volunteers. You know, they're paying their own money to go all over Europe with their athletes and go on training camps, etc. So they ring-fence money to put that back into coach education. And I'd like to think that we're reaping the rewards of that now. Our coaches are far more experienced now than what they were, say, 20 years ago. And I think that's really, really positive. And also, coaches are working together now. You know, there used to be kind of that sort of maybe elements of egos in there where they wouldn't talk to another because their athletes were competing against each other. Whereas now, there's a lot of kind of, there's a community there and people are talking and people are kind of going, okay, how do we do this? You know, if I have a 400 meter athlete, someone else might have run faster. Okay, how did you do that? What did you do? And I think that's what we're kind of getting now at these championships at this level, is the rewards of that.
David, you're obviously in the stadium in Rome. How is the night building? Is the atmosphere? Crowds have looked okay, plenty of Irish flags there, but how is tonight?
Yeah, like, in fairness, bar the Italians, it's the Irish that are making all the noise in the stadium. Crowds, to be fair, have been a little bit disappointing for a major championship, and I think ticket sales haven't gone that well. Like, it's a massive stadium here, probably 70,000 people it can hold, and we're nowhere near that. So it's a little bit disappointing on that side of it. But, like, the Irish fans, and I have to shout out to Seamus Carey, who won't be listening to this because he's here, but he has created, I suppose, an Irish supporters club, and he's brought loads of people together, and they're all together in the stadium, sitting in the same seats, and it's right in the finish line. And every time an Irish athlete comes out, you can see the enthusiasm from the fans, and it's just the smile it's putting on the athletes' faces on the track is fantastic. And I think that's the atmosphere that's building now for tonight. And a lot of Irish people will have looked at these championships and said, okay, well, what days will I go? And this is definitely one of the days that a lot of Irish have come to see, and hopefully it will go well.
Just, David, when we reflect upon it, you know, you mentioned it's, I can't ever remember a situation where I've been talking to somebody about an Irish athlete taking part in the final of the Hammer, or maybe even taking part in the Hammer at all, that for too long, yeah, maybe our track and field was, the field was absent. You know, it's great to see the disciplines expand, and it's great to see, you know, the coverage of the events that suit everybody and are accessible and open to everybody.
Look, that's the beauty of athletics. And, like, you know, my kids are young and they're getting involved into athletics now. And I see it, I suppose, from a different perspective that, you know, there's so much variety in athletics that there's something for everyone, you know. And I think when you see, okay, the success we're having on the track, but if you look a little bit deeper, you know, you mentioned Elizabeth and Doody, you mentioned Nicola Tuchel, like, they're field events. And field events are fantastic. And to have someone in a major final, we haven't had someone in a major kind of hammer thrower final since, oh, you know, Keith back in 2007. You've also got the likes of Deirdre Ryan, who made a final in the high jump probably a decade or so ago. So we do have pedigree in the field events, and it's great that we have someone now, someone young as well, who is tracking really nicely, hopefully for Paris if it goes well. But again, credit to the likes of David Sweeney, who's worked really hard in terms of promoting field events and giving young kids the opportunity to get involved and find something that works for them and something that they're good at. And, you know, long may that continue, because I think there is talent out there, and if we can kind of give them the exposure to athletics and everything that athletics can give to them, hopefully there's more success down the road.
And I know my kids have been glued to it for the last couple of nights, but David, it is an Olympic year, and that is the next question all these athletes are going to be facing.
Yeah.
When people look at the big picture and they think the Olympics, it's only 8 weeks away or whatever it is, have we got Olympic chances?
Yeah, well, like, this is the thing. Like, it's a difficult year from both an athlete perspective and also a coaching perspective, because essentially you're planning for two major championships. And to be fair, a lot of, say, some of Europe's best athletes haven't come to Rome with a view of keeping their powder dry until Paris. But in saying that, like, there's opportunities. And I think when you look at coming to a championship, you want to do well, you want to win medals. And we're seeing that from an Irish perspective. So obviously the mixed relay team, serious potential in that going into Paris. We have to look at the schedule, because you have individual athletes tied into that. And, you know, it's Olympic Games. So where does the relay fit in with all of that? The likes of Rashida, the likes of Charlene, Kira, Sarah Healy, you know, like those are the people that we're looking at now. And I think, you know, when you look at, say, Kira and Rashida, they're probably our two big hopes going into Paris. So, you know, Kira, she's nailed it here, you know, and that's going to give her confidence. She's actually only raced, like, she did two races before these championships, an 800 metres and a 1500 metres. In any other season, you know, like, it would take you more races and you'd have more races under your belt before you go into a championship. So to come into a championship relatively cold and produce a performance like that, yeah, okay, it's not about times in a championship, it's about how you race and how you run. And she's done that well. That's going to give her a lot of confidence. Likewise with hopefully Rashida now tonight, you know, putting down a good marker. She's, her first individual 400 was her semi-final last night of the season. So again, they're only really getting going. But again, if you can put down a good marker now, the confidence, the belief going into another major championship, the bigger major championship of the season, it all bodes well.
It sure does, David. We will all be glued to RTE tonight at 8:50 for Rashida Adelecki and Charlene Mosley. Nicola Tuthill is in the hammer at 8:30. That'll be an hour earlier for you, but it'll all be the same time. I hope you have a good night, and thanks for taking our call.
Cheers, lads.
Game on 2FM.
Well, welcome back to Game On. We're going to turn our attention to soccer. And of course, tomorrow night, Portugal face the Republic of Ireland in Portugal. That is live on Radio 1X and RTE 2 television. But before that, on tomorrow evening's Game On, myself and Marie Crowe will preview Euro 2024 with Keith Tracy, Alan Colley and Mark Langdon. But looking ahead to tomorrow night's game, let's hear from John Cullen, John O'Shea even, and Josh Cullen, and the prospect of facing Cristiano Ronaldo.
Hopefully he's resting. Hopefully he's having another rest, Tony. He might need another week before the Euros. But no, look, he's obviously an amazing, amazing footballer. Still is. The records and goals that he's still setting, and his dedication and professionalism, he's just getting his rewards for that, really. You see what he's done for Portugal too, the tournaments they've won and been involved in. He's obviously been a huge part of that too. So, no, look, as a teammate, it was brilliant because of the character he was in the dressing room too. The relationship he had with everybody was superb to see him develop, because the player that arrived and the player that left, you could see the difference in where he was wanting to go and continue to go. So just a very good, very, very, very special player, and great to be a teammate of his for so many years too, and play alongside him. Some great memories, but hopefully we can... If he is selected, hopefully we can keep him quiet.
The last game, Ronaldo's two
lane headers. Yeah, well, look, it's simple. You know how good he is in the air throughout his whole career. And it's something our defenders will have to be aware of. Simple as that. You have to get contact against him as best you can and stop him getting that leap. But his movement, he's obviously been able to adapt his game. Obviously, the more experience he's got. And it's that movement when he's waiting offside and just spins back around. So our players will be fully aware. It'll be a good challenge for them, but they're the type of games, I'm sure, the players you want to be playing against to test yourself against the best. And the Portuguese squad will be one of the best at this Euros, I'd say.
Josh, was that game one of the most disappointing, the last game?
Yeah, of course, yeah, to concede two late goals like that against an opposition the calibre of Portugal was tough to take. I think the first half of that game we played really well, and then I think there's lessons we can take from the second half. We got sort of penned back in, and sometimes you're able to hang on in them games, but like the gaffer said there, when the opposition have got players the quality that Portugal have, you're likely to get punished if you give them any opportunities. So yeah, we'll definitely learn some lessons from that game, and hopefully we can build on, which was a positive performance last time in the main.
Can I ask you, Josh, can I ask you about two of the players that came on, Troy Parra, who got the winning goal, and Jacob Bryan? Mm. Have they done enough to maybe start them up?
Look, it's what we want from the team in terms of what I mentioned about Tony, the stage of the season that it is for the players. And obviously it'll be a little bit warmer in the stadium tomorrow night than it was in Dublin the other evening. And we saw how we needed the players to come on and impact the game. And it'll be the same again tomorrow, whatever team is selected. It's going to be important that the people who are coming on are finishing the game strong with the ideas like we did the other night, and we got our rewards from it. That's the key message. It's obviously a different test again, but we have to hopefully take some momentum that we got against Hungary into the Portuguese game. Totally different test. Obviously, Portugal have evolved even in those couple of years since we last played them too.
That's Josh and Josh, John O'Shea and Josh Cullen chatting to Tony O'Donoghue. And as mentioned, coverage of that game on television on RTE2 tomorrow evening. Coverage on radio is on Radio 1 Extra. And the easiest way to get Radio 1 Extra is to download the RTE Radio Player app, and you'll find it on that. And it's also available online and a number of the digital platforms. So coverage of that game tomorrow evening as the curtain comes down on what has been a long season for a lot of the players involved. We were mentioning that in a rugby context at the top of the programme, and we'll chat you or see ahead of the semi-finals this weekend with Stephen Ferris after the break. Stay with us.
Game on. Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On, where we're going to look back at last weekend's URC action. Of course, it was quite a final weekend of the URC, and Stephen Ferris joins us on the line. Stephen, I hope you're well, and from a rugby fan, it was probably routine weekend from an Ulster point of view. Disappointing one?
Yeah, it sure was, Ruby. But well, what a game. I think it was the game of the weekend. I was covering three of the four quarterfinals. And yeah, every team in the competition, in the quarterfinals, stood up. And I think the Munster game on the Friday night was probably one that, you know, it didn't live up to what we all thought it was going to, with Ospreys maybe having a go at them. They didn't really fire a shot. But the game, Leinster versus Ulster, it was so competitive, and a couple of cracking tries by Leinster, but a lot of heart shown by Ulster. And it seems like there's been a lot of progress probably since we last chatted, Ruby, a couple of months ago regarding Ulster rugby, and a real feel-good factor. A lot of young guys coming through. There was a number of guys missing as well, there was two back rows playing in the second row at the weekend, and then there was obviously Cormac Izichukwu, who was playing in the second row. He went off, so another back row came in there as well. So yeah, they had their problems, they had their issues getting into the game, just around team selection, but they all stood up, and I thought the game was excellent on a whole.
Stephen, I sense your positivity in Richie Murphy's reign in Ulster.
Yeah, it's hard not to like what he's done so far, isn't it? He's been really, I think the word that he used was clarity in everything that the Ulster boys were doing. I think he's brought a lot of clarity off the pitch as well. There's been no messing around with the way he speaks to the media, and he's a breath of fresh air, to be quite honest with you. I think all the boys have really warmed to him. He's obviously worked with a number of them too, with the Irish under-20s over the years, and he's got a real good feel for the group of players. And I think there's maybe only one game that they weren't competitive in that they lost. I think it's four wins and three losses getting into that quarterfinal against Leinster. And even in those three losses, they were really, really competitive. That's the big thing. They're hanging in games. They're playing particularly well during games. And even though they might not have gone over the line in a couple of them, you can walk away from the King's Banner, you can walk away from an away game and go, geez, the boys give it absolutely everything. Geez, they seem to have a bit of identity at the minute. And they're playing with a freedom, which is great to see. And lastly, obviously, the bloody weather helps. The weather's been great the last six or seven games that they've played, and it certainly suits their style of rugby.
Stephen, when we look at the semi-finals now as they're laid in front of us, the Bulls hosting Leinster in Pretoria, Leo Cullen not shying away from the difficulties of getting a travelling party to Pretoria at 6 days' notice or whatever it has been. Munster against the Warriors at Thomond Park then on Saturday evening. Are we to look at Munster as the team that are probably tapering into this and that are just simply finding the momentum at the right side of the season? Or who of the four to you is the team that's, the one that the eventual champion is going to have to beat if they're to lift silverware in 2 weeks or 3 weeks' time?
Damien, it's a real tough one for Leinster, isn't it, having to go away to the Bulls? We had an interview with John Dobson after the game, and you know, we got chatting to him quite in depth, and you know, he was telling us that in the preparation for their match against Glasgow, there was a group of players left on the Tuesday, a group of players left on the Wednesday, and a group of players left on the Thursday to play a match on a Saturday. And that's just, you know, it's absolutely crazy. Now, I'm sure most of the frontliners who were going to be starting the game were shipped off, you know, in the early flight on the Tuesday. But not having your whole group of players and management together, and hopefully Leinster are able to get everybody over there reasonably sharpish. I mean, get maybe a light training session or two under their belts before they take on the Bulls.
On that, okay, you can come out and you can be Leinster and you can say we're at a disadvantage and it's a challenge and everything else, or you can just look at it and say, well, listen, if you'd finished stronger in the regular season, you know, you'd have had the higher season, higher billing and everything else, so you just get on with it. But there is an issue with the structure of the competition that it can get to a situation like that, and then you factor in the altitude and everything else that Leinster have to face into this week, that it's... Is it slightly skewed in a sporting context in favour of the Bulls this weekend?
Yeah, it probably is, but fair play to the Bulls. Like, that's a position that they put themselves in, yeah, as you say, in the regular season, like getting themselves into the top two. And anybody, even before the Ulster-Munster game kicked off there a couple of weeks ago, like, you were just happy that Ulster didn't, you know, even if they lost, they weren't away to the Bulls, and like they were happy enough that they were away to Leinster just because of the travel situation. So they knew what they were finding themselves in terms of that and where they finished in the league. And yeah, what more can you say about it? Is it a disadvantage? Of course it is. But they're going to fancy their chances. They're playing really well. They have a group of players there that will relish the challenge of going over there. But it's all well and good, Damien, going over there and getting the win, but then you have to jump on a long-haul flight a couple of days later and get yourself back to Ireland for hopefully a final down in Thomond if Munster can take care of Glasgow. So, yeah, I'm sure the logistics of it are very complicated and they're doing their best, but this would have been planned. You know, this would have been a couple of weeks ago. They would have had the wheels in motion for this. The players might have also thought about it and tried to get their head around it if it was going to come around. There's not more can be said about that. They just need to get over there and hit the ground running and deal what's in front of them.
It's South Africa they're going to, isn't it?
Yeah.
The way you're going on, you swear they were going to Auckland, into a different time zone. It's in the same blinding time zone, and surely to God, someone could have foreseen that they're going to have to go there. I'm not buying that. Whatever about paying at the altitude, they should be organised and ready to go. We'll move on. I mean, this is professional sport, like, crying that you have to go somewhere. So what? Get on the plane and go. Be grateful that you're there. What about Munster anyway, playing the Ospreys in Thomond? Jack Crowley stepped up to the mark and kicked plenty of penalties.
Yeah, he did. It was one of those games that caught fire straight away and you were like, holy Moses, this can't keep going like this in the first couple of minutes. A cracking Simon Zebo try. Brilliant that, you know, the boys get down the touchline. Lots of width in their game and silky hands from Gavin Coombs and fresh in the middle of the park. And, you know, Zebo just took his man, I think it was Giles, on the outside and had enough power to get over. And then they came straight back and we were like, okay, here we go. We've got a game on our hands. But straight after that, Ruby, I was really disappointed in the Ospreys. They didn't really fire a shot. Munster controlled the game. They actually controlled the scrum, which was maybe a little bit of a worry going into the game because Ospreys are very strong in that area. But the bench had come off. Holly Yeager, even John Ryan at Loosehead was fantastic. And they're really a match for anybody. And the only thing that was disappointing, Ruby, was probably the crowd. It was just the crowd, you know. I really hope this weekend that everybody can rally behind Munster and they can get a sold-out Thomond Park, because there's no better atmosphere in the country than that. I'm going to be down there. I'm really excited, looking forward to it. But I tell you what, this Glasgow team, I'm telling you, these are the dark horses. They were very, very good in terrible, shocking conditions. It probably didn't look like that on the TV, but it was really, really bad at Scotland Stadium. And they dominated the Stormers. They looked really good in attack. They managed the game well. Tom Jordan at out half controlled things quite nicely. And have a bit of power up front as well, a really strong maul. So, you know, if Munster put in the same performance they did against the Ospreys or against Ulster the previous week, this weekend, then they might come unstuck. But, you know, you only play what's in front of you, and I think Munster do have another couple of levels in them.
Stephen, before we let you go, and listen, I know you probably think myself and Ruby sound particularly miserable and cranky this evening. We're not. Like, we're actually in very good form overall. But we were chatting at the top of the programme about how it feels like the never-ending season. And, you know, the fixtures are confirmed for next year. So the final this year is the 22nd of June. Next year's final is the 14th of June, which I would have thought with the absence of the World Cup, we'd have been finished sooner. Like, It's just so relentless, and when you consider what players put into it, it's I know there's issues around the global calendar, and we're never really going to get that sorted. But it's is it too drawn out?
I don't think it is, but I think what the problem is, Damien, is that there's other squads. You know, you take Leinster, Munster, and Ulster, maybe not so much now, but some of the other squads aren't that big, and you look at the Welsh regions as well, you know, cutting their squad, so having to play a hell of a lot of games is very taxing on a group of players, especially if they're having to be wheeled out week in, week out. So you know, it's a little bit easier for the big teams. Like, I think everybody loves when it comes to the finals time, the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season. That's what it's all about, that's what everybody gets excited about. And yeah, you're possibly right that it does seem to drag out a little bit longer, but I'm all for it. Sure, it's more work for me as well.
Well, listen, that's it. You're never off the television or the radio. Fair play to you.
Well, I'm not going to slag him about that. Stephen Ferris, I hope you have a good weekend in Limerick and enjoy Glasgow and Munster. We've got our ad break to take. We'll be back with Niall Moore and looking back on last weekend's Hurling Championship semi-finals.
Game on.
Hurling.
And it's Hurling to take us home between now and 7 o'clock. Niall Moran's with us to reflect on the weekend. Niall, how are you?
Not as cranky as you by the sounds of it.
Not at all. Now listen, wait until we get
stuck. Hurling was a lot brighter than the rugby.
But was it though? Was it? Kilkenny 328 to 118 winners over Dublin in the Leinster final on Saturday, and then Limerick 126 to 120 winners over Clare yesterday. You're just, you know, waking up in the glow of the six in a row and everything else this morning. In what part yesterday, and try and be neutral if you can be, in what part yesterday was it Limerick brilliance compared to Clare not maybe reaching the heights they could have reached or heights they've reached in previous Munster finals?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Clare definitely didn't show maybe the energy levels that we had expected them to show, and maybe the form that they had shown definitely in the last two encounters. So that probably was a disappointing thing at half-time. The teams were in level when in reality Limerick may have been probably 5 or 6 points better than them. And the feeling even in the stadium was that Clare are still in the game despite not hurling at the levels that we know they're capable of. And so maybe that cameo of Mark Rogers when he hit the butt of the post, like, that could have brought them back to within a point coming down the home straight. But I think ultimately the life was kind of sucked out of them. I just really thought that their heads kind of slightly dropped. They did things that were uncharacteristic of them, and probably the most concerning thing, and the real concern maybe going forward for into 2 weeks' time, the quarterfinal, was the energy levels that they showed, especially in the last 20 minutes. And for their sakes, you'd hope that they just kind of are able to recover, because in Wexford they have a real bogey team that they've struggled over the last decade to put away. And I'm sure there's a lot of people below in Wexford this evening who are saying we could take Clare, and if we had Kilkenny above in Croke Park, this could be our year at causing a shock. So for Clare, it's very, very important that they come back from that quickly. But again, you have to admire Limerick. It was just, again, the amount of guys that came up with huge performances the whole way across the half back line into Garrod, Hegarty, and then someone like Shane O'Brien starting in his first championship game. Do you know what I mean? He was exceptional inside. So look, we are thrilled. And again, so look, we're afraid to wake up. That's the reality of the situation. Like, we, above any hurling county, we most definitely didn't think that we'd have achieved what we achieved, and hopefully we'll stand to achieve more. But I suppose we would do a spare thought for our neighbours, right? And I suppose for a lot of those Clare, not for a lot of those Clare players, for those Clare players, a number of those Clare players, I suppose they really, really crave that Munster medal. And if it is a situation that they don't receive it, then you'd have to feel for them. But I suppose ultimately, I don't think that having a Munster medal or not having a Munster medal or having 7 or 8 of them should define you. And whatever happens in those ads over the next 12 months or a couple of years, like to John Cannon and Shane Allan and David McInerney, they've been some of the greats of the game. And look, just because they may or may not get a Munster medal, it won't define the hurlers that they are.
It most certainly won't. But the scary thing is, when you look at Shane O'Brien, 19 years of age, would he have been in second year when Limerick won the first Munster final 6 years ago? And you think of what's coming with him.
Yeah, he's look, man, not to heap in praises. That's other guys as Adam English, as Fergal O'Connor, there's an awful lot of them. But look, as you well know, when you're in that elite environment, you just thrive and you go to levels. Like, you know what I mean? The other older guys are taking you to a higher level and you're taking the older guys to a higher level. And it's a total domino effect. But again, look, I think Sean Kiley, they'll enjoy today. Do you know what I mean? They'll have a few points, whatever else. But ultimately, there's a major card with the five in a row. And it does come into focus now. But I think for now, it's the possibility of someone like Cork or Offaly coming down your way. And look, again, a great week since I saw in the last great 2 weeks for Offaly. I was up at that Joe McDonough final, and it was probably the game of the weekend. Truth be known, it was the game of the weekend. And Offaly, look, they'll be thrilled to get a win. I think Laois will feel that they left a lot of chances behind them. And but again, it was just, look, I think for Offaly, again, the emotion of the previous Saturday night carried forward. And look, it's a long way from going up to be beaten by Down 4 years ago in the Christy Ring semi-final. So I suppose, again, a lesson to be learned for any counties that are trying to come back up to that level.
I was going to ask you about the Leinster final, but seeing as you brought the John McDonagh up, where do you sit on Laois facing Wexford and Offaly now facing Cork in the preliminary quarter-finals? Because for all the euphoria in Offaly, the win could be taken out of your sails very, very quickly if you have a difficult afternoon at the office against Cork coming up next.
Yeah, look, it's tricky, and come here, it's also tricky the fact that they're playing two high-octane games within 7 days of each other, above whatever about the nature of the competition. Look, it is the format. Again, our format isn't completely perfect, but by God, it's very, very close on perfect. It's been a really, really competitive championship. And do you know what I mean? Having watched Laois in person, I thought they were excellent. It's just that they couldn't get over the line. But it is a big ask to ask them to jump up the two levels or three levels needed to compete with, like, John Wexford and Cork, who've been operating at a completely different level. And I know it begs the question, Neil McMahon has raised it, but there has to be some kind of stay of execution for these teams coming up to senior level. Now, I know obviously Laois aren't coming up, but look, again, if you ask those players this morning, would you rather the year was over or have a crack at those teams for the sake of an extra week, and then they bite your hand off to try and pit themselves against the best, because ultimately it's only in those situations that you're going to learn and develop from.
You're worried about Clare picking themselves up to face Wexford, well, potentially Wexford. What about the Dublin players? How will they pick themselves up after what happened to them in Croke Park at the weekend?
It was a horror show. It was really a horror show. Like, they were 2-18 to 9 points down at half time. Adrian Mullen and 6 points got from play. It was just everything that could go wrong went wrong. But I think they're also the orchestrators of their own downfall. And we were very quick to praise the way they hurled against Galway, the way they withdrew and worked the ball. But what happened above on Saturday was Kilkenny just followed. And Kilkenny showed a hunger that I haven't seen from them all year. They really hunted in packs. But the interesting difference between the two teams was when Dublin had the ball, they kept them going lateral. They conceded, I think there was over 43 turnovers in play by going lateral because they had no option to hit inside, whereas Kilkenny at all times, they kept two inside, and the minute they got the ball in the half back line, they made sure that a third forward, whoever was nearest forward, sprinted to get in. And I think that was the positive nature of their attitude. And again, Kilkenny showed that they are the best at basics, bar none, of the counties left. And they even two sometimes maybe are Limerick in that. Limerick are just such a well-oiled machine in what they do, and obviously excellent at the basics. But Kilkenny's ability to win their own ball in the air, it'll always give them a chance. And they really showed a positive outlook on how they played. And Derek Ling, he now is his best team back on the pitch in All-Ireland semi-final. Have we heard this before? I think we have.
It's interesting, like, we're tight for time, but it does just go to show you how it just takes a completely different format at this point. And the teams, your Kilkennys, your Limericks, your teams that are just so used to tapering for this stage, they just do it so well and do it so brilliantly on a consistent basis.
Yeah, they do, but I think some of this as well as you're going to have to put down to management. And like, people are very, very quick to criticise maybe Clare's tactics and how they maybe address, especially the second half yesterday. But I often kind of liken these managers to Formula One drivers. Like, do you know what I mean? It's, we can all drive a car, we all think we can drive a car, but yet put us behind a Formula One car and we don't know how to drive it. And for some of these managers, like, their ability to, as you said, get teams primed at the right time, make the right decisions, pick the right teams, like, you have to really, really credit, like, obviously John Kiley's management, Paul Kinnerk, you know what I mean, Derek Ling, even Pat Ryan belong Cork. It's no easy task to get a team humming. It's a long year, even to keep guys sweet and all the rest. So it's credit is due to those managements. But maybe the question will be asked of Cork and Kilkenny and a couple of more of them over the next couple of weeks, do they have the plan to beat Limerick? And I'm not trying to throw fuel to the fire about the five in a row or anything else, but like Limerick's ability to adapt in all situations, be it weather or numerical or whatever it is, it's incredible. And I suppose you just have to credit that they have one of the best drivers in John Kiely behind them. Like, and we are blessed at the moment to be celebrating it. And again, look, yesterday was a very, very special occasion for anyone who's at it. It's seldom you get to witness history. And no matter what county you are from, everyone will acknowledge greatness. And I think in yesterday we saw something that was great.
I completely agree with that. Greatness it was. Well done to Limerick. Niall Moran, thanks a bit for taking our call. Damien, I hope you enjoyed this evening. We're not as grumpy as people might think
not
we are.
All,
Ronan
grateful.
Lawler produced. I shall be back tomorrow night with Marie Crowe as we look ahead to Euro 2024. Better De Silva's up next.